Hello, everyone, and welcome to Masters of Digital Transformation, a podcast from AIM10X dedicated to uncovering the stories behind the world's leading change agents and the most valuable learnings from our community of global innovators. I'm your host, Caleb Masters, and as always, we're here to provide you with actionable insights from today's greatest thought leaders to guide and accelerate your journeys. AIM10X is a knowledge and networking hub for leaders passionate about digitally transforming enterprises for better decision-making and a better planet. You can learn more by heading to aim10x.09solutions.com. In today's episode, we'll be joined by Peter Bolstorff, the Executive Vice President of the Association for Supply Chain Management, to discuss preparing for tomorrow's technological challenges through talent management. We'll start by talking about his career journey from a background in math and psychology education to joining the Association for Supply Chain Management. We'll also cover strategies to attract, hire, and retain the top talent necessary for achieving digital transformation success in today's rapidly evolving supply chains. And then we'll close out the conversation by taking a look at the crucial role that upskilling and reskilling will play in shaping and predicting the future of work amidst emerging AI technologies. Without further ado, let's get to know a little bit more about our guest, Peter Bolstorff. Peter is a successful entrepreneur, supply chain management and operations executive with more than 20 years of experience. Currently serving as the Executive Vice President of the Association for Supply Chain Management, he has a proven ability to lead through influence using exceptional communication, coaching, management, and motivational skills. Peter, welcome to Masters of Digital Transformation.
Caleb, I can't find enough times in my day to talk about supply chain management. It's a pleasure to be here.
Wonderful. Well, you have come to the right place. It's my understanding, based on some of our initial conversations, that your career field was originally not in supply chain. So maybe you could take us back to the beginning of your origin story. What led you to the world of supply chain?
So my story is not too different than other folks in my generation, because back in the day, there were no supply chain management programs to begin with. So my degree is math education and psychology. And honestly, psychology probably has helped me in more in supply chain than math has. I got in through training. I went from training manager at a large 3M manufacturing site. I jumped over to the dark side on operations. And then through that whole experience, I had an opportunity to get into supply chain. And so when you think about the SCORE model, I'm really a plan make guy from an experience standpoint. I think that the common denominator is a willingness to learn about the technical stuff and really hone your skills in the soft skills stuff. The last part of the bio, you know, really focuses on things that supply chain professionals today have to deal with is through influence.
Absolutely. So you've got a little bit of the training or education mindset, you would say.
Absolutely. Yeah, I taught math in high school for several years, and then I taught adult education and my master's is in industrial education. So again, at the end of the day, like supply chain, teaching and being able to bring others along is a pretty critical skill.
Very exciting. So listeners, you too can start as a high school teacher and become the EVP of the ASCM. Peter, I mean, I'd love to dig a little bit further into that, though. I mean, I have to imagine that there's got to be a certain level of fulfillment that you get through your career. So what would you say has probably been the most fulfilling part of applying that background in education to your career working with supply chain professionals?
I want to double click on this idea around influence. And I think the supply chain leaders that I've seen in my career so far that have been the most effective have been very comfortable operating in the background. Again, how do you set a vision and then bring your organization along? Because again, at the end of the day, supply chain is really not a command and control function. The most success that people have had is through influence. And so when you think about teaching, teachers by trade are the happiest when their students perform the best. Again, having been in teaching, you know, the amount of external, you know, accolades that you get as a teacher aren't very many. You know, most of the times you're dealing with kids that don't want to learn, or, you know, days that don't go so well, or, you know, people throwing spit wads and those kind of things. So, you know, the idea is being able to see people grow and succeed is really one of those things that I've taken the most in, and not having to have your name on it.
Yeah, absolutely. So you find a certain amount of satisfaction seeing supply chain leaders take your lessons and apply them to the business.
At the end of the day, when I had my own business and I was using the SCORE model to mentor organizations down the supply chain excellence journey, that's all it was. And so I can remember projects, and they usually are about 16 weeks in length, where at the beginning, as I'm starting the teaching, here's how you use SCORE, here's the essential things that you have to do to make your supply chain better. You know, let's just say I was talking half the time and people were taking notes. But as you go through that, tell them, show them, let them try it, and then really guide them through the experience. By the end, when that project team was standing up presenting, here's what we need to do to change our supply chain to make it better, when they were standing up and talking to their leadership team, the C-suite, around the strategic focus areas that they need to drive, I'm sitting in the back of the room saying nothing. That to me, you know, that's one of those Super Bowl or goose pimple moments that you get when that's your groove.
What would you say has been one of the biggest challenges that you've faced in your career so far?
I think it's trying to get a handle on feedback. Let me kind of expand that. I think one of the things that we know from history, going all the way back to the dinosaurs, is those species that survived the longest learned how to adapt the fastest. And the adaptation is really driven by the feedback loops that you have between the environment and yourself. And so from my point of view, feedback is always hard. I mean, think about yourself. The last time when you get solid factual feedback on what you need to do to change yourself, that's not easy to do sometimes. And this idea on being able to take that feedback and really get through the grieving process quickly and then actually enact change, both in yourself and your organization, and learn how to build shared vision on how to make that change, those are the pivot points that are the hardest, but also the most rewarding. And when you think about, oh gosh, you know, how many pivot points have we had in supply chain since I started, right? So if you go back to every single disruption, I mean, right now the stress in our supply chains is at its highest. The disruptions, the categories of disruption are the most varied, the intensity of the disruptions are the most intense, and the frequency, you know, there's actually no space between them anymore, right? And so I think from that standpoint, this whole idea around how do organizations really get feedback from the outside, learn to adapt themselves, and then really come out. Sustainability is a great example. Resilience is a great example of that. And we could list a whole bunch more.
Well said. And I want to pivot here a little bit before we get a little bit more into the role of talent management. You know, you went through the hard one. What's your biggest challenge? What would you say is one of your proudest achievements of your career?
So there's a number. There are moments of truth in my career where you've worked with a team of people together, shoulder to shoulder, to achieve something that was perceived to be unachievable at the outset. And you've done it in such a way where at the end of that, they're feeling themselves energized and jazzed and all those kind of things. And there's probably a handful of those that I've worked on where the results were so dramatic, the challenge was so great, and the team was so good that you just, at the end of that very short period of time, 12 to 18 months, you just look back and you say, wow, that was amazing. You know, it was like climbing Mount Everest.
Collaborating with teams to accomplish monumental tasks. I mean, especially as you mentioned in supply chain, there's been so many disruptions, even in the last 3 years. I want to dig a little deeper into that. I mean, what would you say are the biggest evolutions that you've seen in the way that supply chains function throughout your tenure?
Sure. If we think about using, I'm going to use the SCORE model. So I'm going to go just a little bit deep. So, all right. If you think about the new SCORE model and we think about the strategic processes that need to work together, there's really two, what I'm going to call constantly in motion infinity loops. Loop one is this idea around demand and supply. And the processes that really support that are on the demand side, order and fulfillment. You know, so how do I get an order? How do I fulfill it? And then on the supply side, there's sourcing things, you know, packaging, raw materials, et cetera, and transforming. And that could be in the form of manufacturing or, you know, some other transformative way for a service or something like that. So that's infinity loop one. Infinity loop two has emerged as really a key thing for supply chainers to think about. And that's, how do I think about the synchronization of a regenerative supply chain? So this idea around circularity, you know, so how do I organize and manage a greater percentage of my bill of materials to actually be recyclable, reusable, repurposable, et cetera? How do I manage my transportation so that it's more carbon efficient? All of those things now are in the supply chain domain. And it's really those two things that are constantly in motion that we defined a new process for, and that's orchestrate. And I think as we think about supply chainers in the future, now till 2030, the question is how do I not necessarily operate each one of these pieces, but how do I orchestrate those pieces to go together? And I think that's the key thing we think about the supply chain profession in the future. And then how do we build skills, knowledge, and abilities to be able to do that, knowing that you have technology enablers coming at us faster than ever. Again, we've all seen the AI and machine learning piece in the newspapers, but there's a ton of other automation that's affecting all of us today.
Right. So, I mean, you're talking about the way we even think about supply chain fundamentally is shifting.
Yes.
On top of that, how do we achieve some of these goals using that model, using the technology enablement? Oh, and by the way, we weren't training for this new model 10 years ago.
Right. And I'd say the pool of talent is there. The knowledge and skill needs updating. So think about it this way. I always look for corollaries, right? All of us, generally speaking, deal with robots every day. And you would say, well, what do you mean by that? Well, Siri is a robot. Alexa is a robot. In fact, I can hear Alexa right now asking me what I want upstairs, but we won't go there. And so when we think about how do we work better together with robots, whether they're mechanical or they're software oriented, I think these are things that people, if they can just think about how they've learned to adapt with those, and then how to translate those into things to do at work. The talent is there. The knowledge and skills are what we need to really focus on. How do we adapt that?
Absolutely. And I think that ties really well into a recent study that I read from Accenture that says that only 38% of supply chain executives believe that their workforce is mostly or completely ready to adopt the technology tools provided to them. What exactly are you hearing related to sort of the either talent shortage or maybe skills gap in terms of what's needed to achieve a lot of these big goals through technology?
Okay. So I'm going to unpack that a little bit, Caleb. So let's first talk about digital transformation. There's really two phases. The first phase is really focused on what percentage of the functionality that I bought 5 years ago am I using now? And typically that's only about 30%. So think about it this way. You bought something for $100 and you're only using $30 of it right now. And a lot of the reason for that is because, you know, people didn't focus on how do I engineer my data integrity? How do I engineer my process integrity to, you know, basically operate on a current normal process? A lot of people said, here's how I'm doing things today. I have crappy data. And then they put these brand new systems on top of them 5 years ago. And then people give up and they use Excel. The idea is the first phase of digital transformation is really using what you had 5 years ago. And that MythBuster, you know, goes counter to what Accenture just said. My challenge back to Accenture is for that first phase, how do I challenge supply chain executives and leaders of IT to go back and re-engineer your processes so that you can use what you bought? So that's first phase, and that's counter to that research. The next phase then is, okay, now that I'm doing that, and I really think about my competitive advantage for supply chain, what are those precious few digital capabilities that are really going to separate me from the rest? Again, if you try to do everything, you end up doing nothing. And so the idea is how do you really prioritize those things that are really going to move the needle on what I would call one or all of the triple bottom line factors: economic factors, ethical factors, and environmental factors.
Wow. So again, three very key factors. I appreciate you respectfully disagreeing with Accenture. Technology for technology's sake isn't the answer. So like you say, perhaps you have the answer within a solution that you just haven't really gone through and thought through or figured out how to utilize it as the business demands. Related to that, how do you think supply chain leaders should approach either upskilling or reskilling their existing talent or planners or anyone in these positions to make sure they fill the demand for sort of the new skill set that's going to be required to operate these new technologies?
Great question. So we have kind of a simple six-step process as we think about it. And I'm using our corporate top 10. So when you look at our corporate environment, you know, we work with some of the biggest and best supply chains in the world. And we use what are the top 10 doing and how much are they investing? So the first thing to think about is the best organizations are investing around $750,000 in supply chain talent development every year. And if you go down to the 10 spot, they're at a quarter mil. And so again, the idea there is there's an investment in people and not just teaching them knowledge and skills, but also then thinking about teaching them about how do we want to transform ourselves and all of those things. So what do they do? That's the big question around talent development. So here's the checklist for six things. The first thing they do from a leadership standpoint is they have a real clear end-to-end vision of what do I mean by supply chain. Of course, we're going to suggest using the SCORE model as that. How do I plan, source, transform, order, fulfill, and return? That's kind of our frame. The second thing they do then is once they understand that, they look at, in that context, they look at their performance measures and they really try to understand from a competitive advantage standpoint, where am I at today? Where do I want to be? And based on my competitive profile, what do I want to be the best at? What can I get by with being average at? Once they get to that one, then they say, okay, if you use a SCORE model from a process orientation, they can say, okay, we're going to pinpoint some areas where we think process issues are causing performance issues. Or they may pick, hey, these are the strategic focus areas that we need to advance quickly. And they use those as a focus area. Once they get to that point, they look at who are the people by job title working in those processes? What level are we aiming at? And what processes are we talking about? And here's the list. And organizational HR systems have that list. Once they figure that out, they think big and then they act small. So of that list, what specific job roles do I want to actually focus on a talent development program? So I want to pilot a class. Let's just call it a class. And so let's imagine it's somewhere in the planning. And so CPIM is a very good tool set for that one. And then the next step then is they've figured out who they're going to teach. They figured out what they're going to teach. The next one, which is the most important, they're saying, okay, what problem are we going to try to solve? And so it's almost giving the class an organizational problem to solve as part of that class, you know, that's tied back to one of those metrics that we talked about in step one. And so at the end of the class, not only have the students used the information to do some work that's meaningful to the organization is actually seeing benefits of that. A really simple example of that would be, you know, safety stock calculation. A lot of organizations, when they're going through these new system transitions, haven't reset their master data for, you know, 10 years. And so to look at their SKUs and do an ABC as part of the class, and then be able to reconstitute that information back into their system actually, again, pays for itself in a matter of moments. The last thing then is once they've determined that that works, then it's how do I scale the rest of the folks in that job group? And I know that's a lot of technical stuff, Caleb, but again, when you think about effective talent management, the individual wins, the organization wins, and then ultimately the stakeholders win.
Right. And as you say, it's really a fairly immediate ROI you get.
6 to 12 months. Yep.
You kind of alluded to this. We just talked about technical skills and the value those have. And I really appreciate you laying out a clear step 1, 2, 3 for how to execute that. But something that's equally important, especially as we think about all of these unexpected challenges that supply chains are experiencing, are soft skills, leadership skills, people skills. Why is it important for organizations to invest in those just as well as technical skills?
Well, I think leadership training has been around for a long, long time, right? And I think what we're finding in supply chain is to really maximize the effectiveness of supply chain leaders, again, because there's no command control. And the interesting thing is that we're getting put in the spotlight because those roles are now being considered for CEO roles. And as you think about an effective CEO, leadership, you know, and those soft skills are absolutely critical. And so, you know, in that case, a lot of the supply chain folks have honed their technical skills as they're moving up the ladder. And so there's this real intersection of how do I become an effective storyteller? How do I make sure that I can build shared vision? How do I become comfortable with leading from behind? How do I, and there's a whole set of skills around that are being asked of them because they're being asked to do things going forward. And that's a good problem to have, right? If your job role all of a sudden is being now considered, you know, as a CEO breeding ground, that's a great thing.
Yeah, right, right. Again, it's an investment that pays off in the long run.
Right.
I understand not every business is going to have either enough people resources or the right people resources in terms of that exact skill to meet the demand for the new way of working in a lot of supply chains, which I know likely for some companies has led to recruiting from maybe less traditional talent pools. So maybe you could elaborate here. I mean, what role does talent development and talent development programs, what role do they play in attracting and retaining the right talent?
So great question. And in supply chain, actually, we're quite adept because, again, if you could take a math teacher and make a supply chain person out of them, right, we've been pretty good at that over time. And so engineering, finance, IT, so there's a number of different disciplines that have touched the supply chain. And if they like it, then are part of that one. And that's where certification becomes a big, big deal. And that's why, again, when you look at the people that are taking our programs, it's not always supply chain folks. And so the idea is, how do you take somebody who's successful in their own field, can learn, and then engage them with the right knowledge and skills, and then have them contribute in a different way? So that's been a huge pivot for us, you know, in the last 5 years or so. I think the other pool that is amazing is what I'm going to call, again, when you think about salaried versus hourly, right? And I've worked in both categories, group. So, but when you think about that hourly workforce, there's a lot of talent there. And again, the question becomes then, how do you filter through and identify and proactively develop those folks that can move from that group into more senior management roles over time? And I think those are two pools that companies can really focus on without having to pay big dollars to recruiters and all of those kind of things. And then, of course, there's always, what skills do I really need that I don't have at all? Data science would be a great example.
Looking in maybe less traditional roles to find the right people, I think has really led to increased innovation among supply chains.
Well, the more perspectives that you can have in the supply chain as you operate the supply chain, the better off you're going to be. I go back to that original comment around adaptation. If you've got people who have seen the world and you have a 360 view of your supply chain in the team, you're going to make better decisions than some, you know, people who have not seen 180 degrees of that supply chain. They're just guessing, or they're using the words, well, I feel this, or as you think about success in the end-to-end supply chain is going to be, you know, relationship and technology driven. I think that's important.
What would you say is the connection between a successful talent management program, retaining talent, and a healthy workplace culture?
It has to be a balance, right? So somebody who says, hey, I want to develop myself, they go out, they take the exam, they pass, and they did right for themselves. And we want more of that. So that's a win. So the win-win is when the organization can say, hey, look, I'm going to support that. And I want you to be able to do A, B, and C to help the organization move forward. That's your win-win all the way around. And I think the third win is, hey, and now that the organization is moving forward, we really now want to think about the impact that we have on the ecological factors that we all are challenged with today. So as you think about innovation, you've got yourself to continue to grow. You've got the organization to build on. And then there's this idea around the community. How do I make sure that what I'm doing in supply chain and my organization is doing in supply chain is positively impacting the environment?
Again, increased importance on the ecological impact, as you mentioned there, something we're all looking at more and more every week. One last area I want to touch on before we wrap up is how to anticipate tomorrow's talent challenges. So it really seems like we're in the midst of this generative AI boom, for example. This is really the latest in a major technological advancement that we are really expecting to see fundamentally change the way many professions, including supply chain planners, perhaps, are working. And according to a recent CNBC survey, 47% of top technology officers across the economy, encompassing both chief information security officers and chief technology officers, say that artificial intelligence is their number one budget item over the next year. So again, generative AI more specifically, is a technology that just 5 years ago, for example, would have seemed unimaginable to us today. Using that example, why would you say it's important for leaders to begin investing in upskilling and reskilling their top performers for the digital transformations of tomorrow?
Good question, Caleb. I'm going to put the answer into three buckets. Bucket one is, how do you make sure that what you're doing today, the technology that you're using today, is maximized from a use standpoint? And if it's not, then make that your first learning point, is here's how the system is supposed to work. Here's how we're using it. And then how do we work together to learn how to make full use of that? So people can get a sense of how the integration of good master data then allows you to develop this digital twin, this digital simulation of your business, and see the value of that. So I think that's bucket number one. And that's taking current people with current technology and just teaching them how, you know, to do a better job with that. The second thing then is really picking those key digital areas of investment. So for example, from an intelligent supply, so let's just think about the supply side of the house for a minute. As we think about intelligent supply, collaboration is going to be ever more important, you know, as part of the end-to-end supply chain. And sourcing decisions on where do I source, where can I source, and then how do I use those AI tools to help me make decisions? And then how do I use technology to be able to do, you know, the detailed analyses that I need to be able to make better decisions? You have to be very specific about what you want people to do. Just going out and learning how to use ChatGPT, it may help you answer questions reliably or unreliably, one of the two, but it's not going to help you necessarily do your job better. And I think the third area then is to really start to rethink, as technology and automation come together, people are really going to have to rethink, how do the jobs change? It used to be a job for every process. And so now maybe 5 years from now, supply chain, all they do is orchestrate, because they got other tools and other kinds of things are managing the minutiae of, you know, how do I plan, you know, source, transform, you know, order, fulfill, and return. And so I think there's this vision of what does the job look like in 2030? And then how do I start building capabilities for that, which is not just knowledge and skills. It's actually building the job of what those folks are going to be doing.
Right. So really having to, using all the data and education resources available, hedging your bet on what direction you think the market will go in.
Yep. And again, as you said, we do a top 10, next 10 trends. And interestingly enough, the trends don't change that much. Sometimes they bifurcate and they get more detailed, you know, so where advanced analytics may then have morphed into advanced analytics as a separate distinct topic from AI and machine learning. But at some point in the not too recent history, those two things were the same, at least from a trend standpoint. So I think people keeping an eye on the trends and just understanding how those are going to impact the jobs, it's not a crapshoot. I mean, these things can be designed and thought about. And again, from a feedback standpoint, that's the most important skill set. How do I adapt, you know, moving forward individually and organizationally?
Well said. Peter, I just want to give you a chance to tell me, I mean, you've already talked a little bit about the SCORE model as well as the different programs you have available. Are there any other tools or programs from the Association of Supply Chain Management that you'd like to share with our listeners today?
Sure. And this is a shameless plug. There's three things I'd like folks to think about. We are the largest global association from an educational certification standpoint globally. And so there's three big buckets people should think about as a resource for them as they go through their career. Bucket number one is what I'm going to call the event portfolio. As you think about, how do I think about the latest trends, either near my home, you know, with our supply chain tour, or at one of our Connect conferences, either in Europe or North America, how do I leverage that to keep up with what's going on, build relationships, and kind of understand best practices? We have our learning products, right? Those certifications and certificates. And those things are intended to really, from a both a tactical and a strategic standpoint, make sure that you're up to date with what we know to be successful skills and responsibilities and tasks going forward. The third bucket is a sense of community. And so when you look at, again, we're a professional membership society as well as we have corporate members. It's this idea around how do I maintain connected to that community? And then how do I leverage all of the other things like on-demand access to content and those kind of things as we go through time? Those would be the three big areas that I would tell the audience to pay attention to as you go through your supply chain career.
Excellent. Well said. Peter, hey, it's been such a pleasure speaking with you today. Lots of great insights. I feel like I learned a lot about you and your background. Are there any closing words of wisdom you would impart to our listeners today related to talent management or planning the workforce of the future?
I do. And it's one thing that I would encourage everybody to think about is supply chain excellence is a journey. And so when you think about that concept, you have to think about the journey as your home. There's really no end to it, which is exciting for me because I'm a continuous learner and I love all those kind of things. So as long as you're comfortable with the journey being your home, you're going to be in a sweet spot in supply chain.
Continuous learning. You're never too old to learn new tricks. You're never done developing. Peter Bolstorff, thank you so much for joining us on the Masters of Digital Transformation today.
Caleb, a pleasure.
And thank you, listeners, for tuning in to today's episode featuring Peter Bolstorff, the Executive Vice President at the Association for Supply Chain Management. Now, if you enjoyed today's conversation and you want to learn more from the world's leading change agents, you can join our community of global innovators by heading to aim10x.o9solutions.com and signing up today. Aim10x is a knowledge and networking hub for leaders passionate about digitally transforming enterprises for better decision-making and a better planet. You can also keep up with more episodes of Masters of Digital Transformation by heading on over to Apple, Spotify, or your preferred podcast app and subscribing and following and then leaving us a rating and a review so that we're discovered by more listeners just like you. And you can learn more about the activities and learning opportunities available through the AIM10X Innovators Network by following AIM10X on LinkedIn. To close us out today, I wanted to echo this idea shared by the best-selling author and Novartis Professor of Leadership and Management at the Harvard Business School, Amy Edmondson, when she said, "Learning is not a one-time event or a periodic luxury. Great leaders in great companies recognize that the ability to constantly learn, innovate, and improve is vital to their success." Thank you so much for joining us, everyone. In our next episode, I'll be joined by Daryl Edwards, the former Chief Operating Officer at Lazy Boy, to discuss how to implement the next generation of IBP technologies emerging in today's marketplace. We'll catch you again next time.